Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
He does the research, analyzes the data, and checks the variables. He even submits his findings for peer review. He's the only man with a lab coat made entirely from NFL bed sheets. He's data scientist Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. Only on the program.
Eager's brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. Family Leisure's got you covered. Your man cave, if you're getting ready to hunker down, you know, the colder weather's going to be coming. Make sure you're all set to have a great time downstairs with the family, whether it's the pool table, shuffleboard, maybe it's arcade games. Maybe it's a poker table, theater seating to watch the Chiefs game. They got you covered. Of course, beautiful weather right now. If you're looking to get outside on your patio and you don't have the best patio furniture around, go to Family Leisure. Been buying my furniture there. Got it all. Every piece that we bought going back to 2004 when I made my first purchase. And it's still out there. We've just added to the set, a chair here, a table and a chair there. It's absolutely fantastic. Still using the stuff we bought 18 years ago. Got it at Family Leisure. Mention 810 and save even more. I'll let Dennis and his staff do a great, great job of helping you. Have fun with your family. It's at Family Leisure. K10 and Ridgeview online at familyleisure.com. We welcome our friend Eric Eager to the program. Eric, how are you, sir?
Serena, I was telling you yesterday that Indiana just smells a little different after a Chiefs win. I'm on my way to go cash my Chiefs ticket. So things are good.
Does Indiana usually have a funk? Is it poor smell? Or no, it just has no smell, and now it has the smell of cash.
Yeah, I think much like taking Daniel Sorensen out of the Chiefs defense, it went from just smelling really bad to not smelling at all.
There it is. There it is. We always appreciate the humor of one Eric Eager coming out firing here in the program. Let me ask you, at halftime, down 13-10, where was your level of frustration, pessimism? Were you ready to throw in the towel on the season?
My buddy at work, David Sofaro, and I, both Chiefs fans, watched the games, among all the games. And at halftime, we were deciding, like, who the 10th pick of the draft was going to be. And by the middle of the third quarter, we both were yelling that the Super Bowl's back on. So it was a swing. It was a swing. I felt like hidden in the bad first half was the fact that other than a seam ball, the former Chiefs legend, Ricky Seals-Jones, the defense had played fine. They had gotten stops. You know, Taylor Heinicke being the quarterback notwithstanding, like, they were tackling better. And so... add to that a 0 point second half, and, you know, obviously Mahomes in the offense moving the ball, I would say, methodically down the field. It went from a lot of frustration to a sigh of relief, and I feel like, you know, that was the ceiling for that Chiefs game against Washington, right? You weren't going to come out of the game thinking, oh, you know, this team's back, right? Because of level of competition, you could obviously have come out of it thinking the worst about the team, but you know, I think the feeling was relief, and I think the Chiefs did exactly what you hoped they would do in that game to sort of elicit a little bit of relief. And luckily for them, with the Bills and the Chargers falling, you know, some things played out nicely for them in the AFC too.
Yes, they did, and we're down to just one team in the AFC, right? Just Baltimore's 5-1. So they're only one game back of everybody else. Baltimore also has a head-to-head win against the Chiefs, so that's going to make it tough as far as getting the one seed away from the Ravens. But, you know, the Chiefs, we all know, and this is what they did in the second half, is they got to fix their own house first, right, before you go worried about what's going on everywhere. And they seem to do it. You know, the turnovers continue. I want to, because I sold this. You are giddy with the interception numbers, interceptable pass numbers. Your numbers seem to be different than the numbers that I was spouting the other day. What percentage, let's start with this, because Patrick Mahomes did throw a couple more INTs. What percentage of passes that are interceptable according to Pro Football Focus and the data scientist Eric Eager, actually get intercepted?
Yeah, so we call them turnover-worthy plays. So, like, they're anything from a ball, you know, like, think about the Jamal Adams ball that hit him in the face the other day from Ben Roethlisberger. Think about the David Terrell, but it's A.J. Terrell, the dropped interception against the Falcons last year. Like, those are turnover-worthy plays. From 2018, so when Mahomes started being a starter in the league, to 2021, about 62%, I believe, of those plays are actually intercepted. So not every ball that's interceptable is intercepted. This year it's actually 72%, which is kind of interesting. Defense may be getting a little bit more lucky, or maybe there's more zone being played, so those balls are caught more, something like that. Patrick Mahomes going into this season, only 46% of his turnover-worthy plays were actually intercepted on pass attempts.
All right. Before you roll to the rest of the numbers, why? Why is his – you said it's normally what, 62%?
Yeah, low to mid-60s.
Is it just luck, small sample size and luck, as to why his number was down at 46%? Or is there something about the way he throws the ball or the way Andy Reid coaches offense that those interceptable balls aren't caught as much?
Yeah, I mean, it's a low sample thing. I mean, he was producing about one of them per game last year. And this year, it's a little bit – it's about the exact same rate per game of turnover-worthy plays. You can attribute that, I think, to luck. I mean, there's some evidence using the tracking data that a ball is harder to intercept the harder it's thrown. And obviously Mahomes is one of the best arms, if not the best arm in football. You can make maybe a case that some of it was how hard he was throwing the ball. But it's probably just noise, right? Like, it's probably just noise. He's getting, like, the fun end of it for 3 years. And this season, 100% of Patrick Mahomes' turnover-worthy plays have been intercepted. So you're kind of just seeing the worm turn a little bit. If you're a Chiefs fan, it's actually good news, right? Because it's not like it reverted back to league average. It reverted to 100%, you know. So if anything, things are going to get better, you know. Maybe not back to where they were in 18 through 20, but back to league average would do the Chiefs a lot of good. That's maybe an extra drive or two. The other one that was interesting, in the NFL, about 32% of interceptions, 34%, I think, of interceptions are not turnover-worthy plays, meaning, like, you throw the ball, it's like Tyreek Hill dropping the pass and
right.
The guy intercepting it the other day. Prior to the season, 20% of Mahomes' interceptions were not turnover-worthy, meaning 80% of the interceptions he did throw, he earned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the other 20% were actually someone else's fault, like Tyreek Hill's on a couple.
Fault. 28, so now this year is 25%, meaning that he's had interceptions that were not his fault. At a higher rate. So, again, if you're a Chiefs fan, you look at that and you say, wow, we've been pretty lucky the last couple of years. And then on the other end, you say, well, this year we've been historically unlucky. So if you get some sort of reversion, add that to all the great things the Chiefs are doing. I tweeted this out yesterday. The Chiefs, going into last night's game, are the only team in the NFL whose receivers had no contested. So they were not contested on over 90% of their targets, meaning – They're getting open. Like, this offense is going to blow up at some point. And not having as many turnovers is a clear place where that could happen. And it's not just that it's not Mahomes being careless. It's just a string of bad luck in many cases.
Right now, Pro Football Focus, your great website, has Patrick Mahomes rated 16th of 33 quarterbacks.
Yep.
If the data's there that he's just kind of getting unlucky on the interceptions, why doesn't he grade higher?
Well, I think part of it is that, like, some of the stuff that really grades well in our system, like, he just can't do anymore, meaning that, like, you're not facing blitzes, you're not facing man, you're not facing the, like, single high coverages that you could throw over the top of. And I also think he's just missed more throws, or he's had more throws, to your point about Buffalo a couple weeks ago, where no one's open, so he's just grounding it, right? And that, you know, that's not obviously – some of those plays are going to get negatives for us. Some of them are going to get zeros. I think the high-end stuff has not been necessarily as high-end. And I think you know, even though they're being really efficient on offense, it's been kind of in this like little, it's been, you know, sort of 5-6 yards at a time rather than a 70-yard play here or a 50-yard play there, which they have had a couple, but like not as many as the past. I think that's kind of where he graded off the charts before. And that's where some other quarterbacks have really graded well this year and why he's 16th. I don't think his grade's bad. It's just that a lot of quarterbacks have had strings of good luck, for example, this year. And a lot of quarterbacks aren't asked to do as much as Pat. And so, like, for example, a guy like Kirk Cousins who has a good grade, a lot of that's because Minnesota only puts him in positions to have success on his throws. And that's why Minnesota's offense isn't as good as the Chiefs. But Kirk Cousins, for the six-game sample we're talking about, is grading a little bit better.
Because they basically are just giving him what he can handle.
Exactly. That, like, and over the course of the season, it tends to even out because there are going to be games where Mahomes, like, doesn't need to be put in a stressful position, and therefore he's not going to produce negatives. And Kirk Cousins is going to play, like, if you look at the Vikings schedule, like, they're going to play some great teams, and he's going to have to throw the ball in stressful circumstances, and he's going to look worse on those plays than Mahomes looked on his. And the distribution of such plays is going to even out, and that's why Mahomes, when you always look at the PFF grade, ends up somewhere between 1 and 5 every year because, you know, ultimately over a big enough sample, the circumstances are put in sort of even out a little bit.
We're talking to Eric Eager, Pro Football Focus data scientist. So you mentioned the Mahomes, like maybe, you know, the grading kind of dinging him a little bit. Do you think he's playing as well as he's played in the past? If he's not, how significantly worse is he playing? Is it of consequence, or is it just like, hey, bit of a rough stretch and it's happening at the beginning and that's why the numbers are down?
It feels a little bit like in 2019 where he had the ankle and, you know, there was just something a little bit off all the time. I think this year, obviously, he's healthy, but it does look like something's off. It looks like, you know, he's not taking a profit on some of these plays, you know, where, you know, I've talked about this on your show for weeks now. It'd be really nice for them to have a running back that he could just go to and pick up 6-7 yards in the air. And it doesn't look like they have that sort of down payment on the offense this year.
You didn't think he got that in this game?
Not really. I'd have to look. I mean, they ran the ball a lot to Darrell Williams, and I think you called me out for this, which is smart, on your show. A lot of those happen, you know, obviously in the 2-minute, but they still ran the ball a lot on early down as a percentage of their plays relative to what I think they should do. I think a perfect world Chiefs offense throws the ball in 80% of downs, and 15% of those downs are check downs to a running back who gains what the equivalent of a good run play would be. And because when you turn around and hand the ball to Darrell Williams, you've lost a lot of the upside for a play. If you drop back the throw and you dump the ball to Darrell Williams, that's after examining the upside of going downfield first. And I think Reed, and then Reed's done a good job. Like, I'm dinging him a little bit this year. It's not as fun watching his offense. But if you look at all the key performance indicators, they're running RPOs, they're running... They're really successful on early down, second in the NFL in percentage of early downs that gain a successful play, et cetera, et cetera. He's been fine, but like the one place that I'd like to see them, you know, I just like to see them drop back to throw more. But I'd like for there to be an outlet for Mahomes other than running around and grounding the ball because guys downfield aren't open. I still need to see that more. I'd like to see them have some sort of running back that emerges, like James White or Kevin Falk did for New England, and I just haven't seen that yet.
See, I thought Darrell Williams did a pretty nice job of, one, making himself available out on those kind of flare-outs. I thought, particularly in the second half, Patrick Mahomes looked for him, and he did a nice job, you like to say, like you like running backs like Darrell Williams, running backs that are insecure, right, with an inferiority complex. I thought he made a move. He always made the first guy miss. And then he went straight up the field, plowed into whoever was waiting for him, and got every yard that he was untouched, plus another 2 or 3 as he moved that defender back and was getting 5, 6, 7 yards on those catches. I thought you were going to come in being all giddy about Darrell Williams' performance.
Yeah, I guess I do think the passing game, that might be something I just didn't pay as close enough attention to. I was more concerned about the fact that he got 21 carries and he didn't even get 70 yards. Like, I was a little, like, I thought, and again, a lot of that was in, you know, grinding out the clock time. But there were a lot of really down runs by the team, too. And I would just like to, like, if Darryl can continue to do what he did out of the backfield, catching the ball, I just want to see those be the plays for Darryl Williams and not 21 of the plays being run. You know what I mean? Like, if he catches 10 balls out of the backfield, I'm fine with that as long as it doesn't complement 21 carries. If he gets, like, 6 or 7 carries and then catches 10 balls out of the backfield, that seems like a decent split.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let's take a break. We're talking to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. The data scientist is with us, brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. They're at K10 in Ridgeview if you're looking to have fun with the family, whether it's the hot tubs and spas. Great sale going on right now on the hot tubs and spas on a cool fall night. Nothing better than a nice hot tub. Get it right now at Family Leisure, K10 in Ridgeview, online at familyleisure.com. When we come back, we'll look ahead to the game against the Tennessee Titans. Also talk about the personnel changes that happened on the defensive side of the ball with Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus.
The program with Soren Petro.
Fred, yeah, embrace it. What else are you going to do, man?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz end of the hour answer. Discussed yesterday that the Packers were 45-15 against the Bears over the last 30 seasons, so it got me thinking, what is the most one-sided divisional series over the past 30 years? Should we give Eric Eager a chance to make a guess?
Didn't you ask this yesterday?
We discussed it yesterday, but we didn't ask it.
Are we allowed to pick a division where one or a division rival or one of the teams did not exist for 3 years?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm going Pittsburgh versus Cleveland.
That is correct.
There you go. In your face, Seabolt.
Steelers over the Browns. They were 43-11 since.
Remember when you were good at these questions?
I don't ever remember that time.
Nope.
That's a seven.
I mean, look, if the Browns couldn't beat Pittsburgh with one Kelly Holcomb throwing 500 yards in a playoff game, in the snow, it was just never in the cards for a while.
Yeah. 43-11, 796, the second highest winning percentage is the Colts against the Texans, fewer games. They are 31-9, 775.
What was it, 796 win percentage? What was the record?
43-11.
That's dominance. The Chiefs have been kind of doing that to the AFC West, at least until before this year. They just get the one loss in division this year, but so they could still have a very impressive 5-1 record. But that's kind of been the Chiefs' domination of the AFC West here of late, certainly during the Patrick Mahomes era. Great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Eric, next time you're in KC, we got to take you to Jazz. Great live music, unbelievable Cajun food. Three locations out at the Legends by the racetrack. Also, right there in Independence, I-70 and 291. And then, of course, the original right there by the KU Med Center. That's at 39th and State Line. Great place to meet some friends for a cocktail and listen to some live music or a great, great dinner. Great Cajun food. It's at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. There aren't many places that even my 11-year-old likes to go to, but plenty of options on the menu. Go get you some stuffed mushrooms if you like, some catfish nuggets. Those are some of my favorite appetizers. It's a Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. We're talking to Eric Eager, the data scientist from Pro Football Focus. It is official now, just in the last few minutes, Whitney Mercilus has been released by the Houston Texans. He has 3 sacks this year. This is as much about them just waving the white flag, I think, and maybe somewhat tanking for a high pick. As it is, like, the guy can't play, right? Like, he belongs in the NFL. The question is, what's he worth? And if you were the Chiefs, would you be making a run at him?
Yeah, I mean, the hard part here, this kind of does smell a little bit like Terrell Suggs a couple years ago, where the Chiefs were able to, you know, pick a guy up like that and have him be a complimentary player. They probably need a pass rush like this more than any contending team in the NFL. Dollars and cents are going to be rough for them, though. I said this on Twitter yesterday. I'm all for any move that doesn't have sort of a long-term price tag, and I fear that Mercilus is going to have enough of a market where the Chiefs can get in some sort of bidding war where they maybe have to move even more money around to make it work. And if that were the case, I'm not all that keen on it. If they can get him for something similar to the veteran minimum, then absolutely.
Well, then let's talk about Tyrann Mathieu. Is this the time for them to be doing a renegotiation, or not a renegotiation, an extension with Tyrann Mathieu? Like, if it's coming anyway, and you can get Merciless for just the cost against the cap this year, or are you thinking there's going to be a multiple-year offer for him somewhere else?
I don't think so. So for that, I mean, you look at, you know, Melvin Ingram, a player we talked about, did not get that kind of money. Even our old friend Justin Houston did not get that kind of money. Like, I don't see most – like, I don't know if it's going to be that much for Merciless, but even if it's something like $4 or $5 million, right, like, that's prohibitive for the Chiefs and, you know, prorated. And the question I have is, if you didn't have to do this move, or you didn't feel like you needed this pass rush help, would you sign Tyrann Mathieu to the extension? Or are you signing Tyrann Mathieu to this extension to make this work? Because I think that if the latter is the case, I don't want to do it. You know, like, I don't want to make future decisions just to sign an edge player so they can win the Super Bowl this year, or try to win the Super Bowl this year. Like, to me, I think that's like the fork in the road the Chiefs are in, right? Like, at some point, you just have to cut some losses on some bad decisions. And Mathieu was not a bad decision. Don't get me wrong here. I'm saying, you know, Hitchens and Clark and some of the bills you're currently paying are some decisions that were not great. And at some point, you just need to, like, let it breathe a little bit. If you're like a blackjack dealer, it's sort of like no more bets. You know, like, at some point, just let the thing breathe a little bit and just say, we'll come up for air a little bit later. But, like, the more that they push stuff into the future, the more I get worried. And so that's kind of where I draw the line in a situation like
that.
Well,
I agree. And so, to me, the first question you got to ask, because, I mean, can they go carve out some money somewhere else by moving some money around, guys? They can. And I'm with you. If one penny gets moved backwards, then I'm not going for Merciless, because I don't think he's going to come in and have 10 sacks in 12 games, right? I don't think he's coming in and going to set the world on fire. I think he'll be an upgrade, but I think at some point you got to quit paying for this year in 22, 23, and 24. And I know the cap's going to go up, but the cap's going to go up, and they're not going to be able to sign anyone. They're just going to be keeping what they have. And clearly, as we sit here, what they have 3 years from now, 3 years older, is going to be disaster, right? Because it ain't that great now. So to just keep this band together, which by the way, is not keeping them all, right? Because we already know they've got, like, what is it, 31 guys or something like that under contract, and they're already, you know, got a higher cap number next year than they have this year. So they're not going to keep them all together. But even all these guys 3 years from now is a bad mix. All right, so that being said, so I'm not for shoving money into future years to try to open something up for Merciless. And I also think that you should make a case that, like, I don't know if these guys have played well enough the last couple of weeks. Like, maybe if you could wait until after the Titans game and see if they go lay a beatdown on the Titans in Nashville, and you say, okay, you know what? Maybe we aren't getting back to that swag. Maybe the Chiefs are. Because if that happens, people will be talking about, uh-oh, look out, the Chiefs might be the best team in the NFL again. Looks like they figured it all out, right? If the defense plays well, then maybe there's a reason to get excited. But right now, throwing Merciless onto a team that, you know, is 48 hours removed from people questioning whether or not they're even going to be a playoff team seems like a stretch. Now, that all being said, if you're doing a contract extension for Mathieu anyway, right, if this is going to happen, and we can debate, and I'm happy to do it, I'd like your opinion on whether or not they should be, but if they've already decided, forget what Eric Eager and Fatty talk show hosts think, we're doing this, well, then get to it and get it done and clear the space so you can be active here at the deadline.
Yeah, I think what you said is perfectly said, which is you don't want to be sitting there in 2023 and thinking, we really did all of this so Whitney Merciless could get 4 sacks for us in the year that we went 10-7 and got the 6th seed. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the evaluation, I think. And we've all baked these kind of seasons into our Chiefs analysis, haven't we? Like, we didn't know that it was going to be Ducky and Bunny, like, every single year. And I guess the question becomes, like, can you still be congruent with, I guess, like, the results of this, like, can you be content with the results of this year? Because, like, the way I say it is, like, you shouldn't, the way that, the best that you've made are almost entirely about, we have the best player in football, and if he gets hot, no one can beat us. And Whitney Mercilus does not change that at all, right? He doesn't change that at all. And so the question that I have is, don't add more bets to that. And you know, the Matthew thing's interesting. I've been less than impressed with him this year, even though I know he's a great player. I think he's sort of a value add to, like, a team like the 19 team, where the defense is playing good football, and he, like, adds to that some supreme play, and they can sort of, like, parlay all that and make, you know, that into a really good defense. I think on a bad defense, Matthew's sort of standing there with his arms held out high, like, why am I not making an influence? And so for a player like that, like, do you really want to be all that, you know, all that committed, especially given, like, his age and his size and all that kind of stuff? That's a good question. I would lean no, but I lean no on Chris Jones, too, and not because he's not a good player, but just because at some point, they don't call them difficult decisions because they're cutting Daniel Sorensen. They call them difficult decisions because they're letting good players go.
And it's playing the cap game, which people don't ever want to play. I get it. The casual fan doesn't want to sit and hear about it. But for $21 million, you can sign four. Like, everyone's running around screaming about Melvin Ingram. Fine. Okay, let's get some Melvin Ingram. And three more Melvin Ingrams. Just don't sign Chris Jones. This was the math we discussed with Chris Jones. It's not, as you and I have said, and we've said it on the Red, White, and Drew podcast a couple of times. I think we talked about it last week, that it's not that either one of us don't want Chris Jones. We're all for Chris Jones. You know, I mean, if I were able to re-rack what was done with Chris Jones, it would have been signing him the year before when they, by all accounts, did try to sign him. And he's like, no, he bet on himself and he wanted the big contract. I don't know that he won. He wanted Aaron Donald money. He didn't get Aaron Donald money. He definitely didn't lose, but I don't know if he won, right? But that was the time the Chiefs should have traded him. Now, it was a different era because they hadn't won a Super Bowl yet, right? That was going into the Super Bowl year. So I want to asterisk. I think, like, but now that you've won that and you've gotten the 50-year stink off you, you don't ever have to be all in. You can now go with the math. And when the math says don't sign 30-year-old safety with two rehab knees, don't do it. Right? Like, oh, the fans are going to be pissed if we lose them. They'll get over it. Just get back in the playoffs. As long as you have 15, they're not going to cry for very long when Matthew goes someplace else. So if the math says don't do it, then don't do it. And the part on Chris Jones was, had you not done the Frank Clark deal, right? I'll go back to what my plan was. Trade up for Montez Sweat, who's, I think, had the second or third most sacks in that draft class. By the way, the most, we looked it up. Do you know who has the most sacks from the 2019 draft class where the Chiefs gave up their first and second round pick?
He plays for the Raiders. He was drafted in the fourth round.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Max Crosby.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Raiders also stepped on their own junk in that draft and drafted Cleveland Farrell fourth overall. So that goes to show that was not a Raiders genius. It was more of just dumb luck, which, again, let that be a lesson to everybody who thinks being a GM is about picking the right players and less about strategy.
I will say, though, their strategy, I think, was we got to help the pass rush, and they threw numbers at it, right? They drafted a number
Raiders,
of guys.
Yeah,
the Raiders,
yeah.
In their defense. But, I mean, I think
the Chiefs did the exact opposite, right? The Chiefs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They didn't. They give up tons of options to just go all in on one guy, and they do the same thing cap wise.
The Seahawks world will talk about LJ Collier, and it's not LJ Collier is not the point. It's that you take a number of bites at the apple, and the Chiefs decided to put the whole apple in their mouth, and again, it hurt them.
Yeah, I will forever feel compelled to have to say they did win a Super Bowl. And I think Frank Clark, even though you and your other math nerds there at Pro Football Focus might, you know, chirp back at me, I do think he helped and was part of the equation. I think there was a swagger. There were a lot of different intrinsic things that maybe the math don't show, even though, you know, you're like, hey, it took 6 seconds to get there. I know it did. We'll just agree to disagree. I think he was part of that equation. But I will tell you, I think Montez Sweat could have done it. and you know maybe you have to give up a first and a second round pick. That's fine. Montez Sweat isn't playing. He didn't need a $120 million contract, you know, like Frank Clark did to get signed. It was just a bottom of the first round deal. So to move up like the three spots, I think they would have had to have, or they had to have get in front of them. So maybe it's five or six spots that they had to. Maybe they do have to give up a second round pick to move five spots. I don't know that you did. Maybe you'd get something back, a fourth as well. But I mean, to me, that would have been a smart move. That was the guy that I thought looked like. And by the way, he definitely, Montez Sweat absolutely looks like a Steve Spagnuolo defensive end, does he not? Long, lean, you know, quick. Like, that's his kind of guy. I don't know. That's my frustration about that.
Yeah, can we talk about the Washington football team defense for a second here? Because I think it has a anecdote for Chiefs fans. That defense was the defense every single person was talking about as a candidate for the best defense in the NFL going into the season, and they have been dreadful. If you're a Chiefs fan and you're looking for some optimism, just know that can also happen in the other direction. And defense, the opponents you play when they, and it's a lot more noisy. So I think that's a good anecdote for Chiefs fans who think the sky is falling about the defense. It can go in both ways.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, and they're going to have some decisions they're going to have to make on the offensive side as well. Right, like they need to get better on that side as well, because all three of their wideouts after, Mecole Hardman's got another year, so the next two wideouts are free agents again, and I don't know how long you're going to keep running those guys back. So, you know, they have a number of things that they need to address. All right, let's take a break. I want to talk about the personnel changes and the Titans. We'll do it next with Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. The data scientist is in the house. He's brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. Speaking of your house, if you want the ultimate man cave, Family Leisure is where you go to get it done. Find them right now at K10 and Ridgeview. See them online at familyleisure.com.
The program with Soren Petrov.
Nailed it. Suck it.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810
WHB. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking to the data scientist, Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. Eric, Juan Thornhill in, Dan Sorensen out. That was a decision that was made. It seemed to work well. Certainly the results were better. How about Nick Bolton coming in for Anthony Hitchens? That wasn't a choice they made. It was made for him because of the injury. But that seemed to pay dividends as well. And I think it's, you know, against Derrick Henry, I'd kind of like to see Bolton and Gay, two guys that arrive with some thump, going up against Derrick Henry next week in Tennessee.
Yeah, I think you're going to get that, right? You did see Willie Gay play about 30% of the snaps. A lot of that was in base defense. You still saw that. And, you know, as you know, Sunday demonstrated that shame matters. Shame works, but not that much, because you still saw Ben Neiman out there. But Gay and Bolton in for a majority of the snaps. Titans run a lot of two wide receiver sets, so you're not going to see, you know, as much nickel. So we will see Willie Gay out there. I think not a lot of.
We're losing you a little bit, Eric. I don't know if you're in a spot, if you're driving out there to collect your wagers, but your phone's kind of cutting out here on us. Do you still have us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, go ahead. It seems like it cleared up a little.
Okay, sorry about that. You know, I'd love to talk about Derek Nnadi. I know Jeff was fun, you know, finally, you know, Mike Pinnell.
All right, I'm going to put Eric on hold. We seem to have lost our connection. We'll see if we can dial him back. Gotten to that point.
Mike Pinnell, but it didn't get anything else.
You know, it's Indiana. I know. It's Ohio.
It's still the 50s there.
What do you expect, right? Like, you know, it's not civilization when you're traveling outside of Cincinnati. All right, we think it's better. Go ahead. So now you were saying about stopping the run.
Yeah, I just think they need to be more physical. They need to have physical players. I think Derek Nnadi needs to show up and play like he did last season. And if they do, I think that they can have decent results. But this run game has been sort of out worthy of the past, you know, for the Chiefs. It presents a challenge for the Chiefs.
It does. And are the Titans good? Because I think neither one of us were really highly sold on the Titans. Did we see? I can't say that the Bills came in here and had a letdown, right? Which I thought was a possibility after scaling their Mount Everest, which was the Chiefs. You know, that's the team that they really measure themselves against, and that's the one that I think they really wanted to knock off. So I thought they could come in here flat and lay an egg. The fact that they were in the game toe-to-toe and the fact that the Titans took on some water, some injuries along the way, Taylor Lewan going down, secondary losses, and still got a win is very impressive. But was this their last hurrah? Do you think that this was just their day of days? Or no, is this team better than maybe both of us thought?
I don't think Tennessee played all that well last night, to be honest with you. Like, they gave up a lot of ground to Buffalo, who sort of stalled out in the red zone. And, you know, Ryan Tannehill didn't really play well until the end of the game. You had the long run by Henry that kind of kept him in it at first. You had the Julio Jones weird catch. You had the interception by Byard in the first, I think it was the first half, maybe the second half. Like, there was a lot of variance that held Tennessee there. And if you look at the betting markets, our friend Jeff Shadia thought that 4.5 was too many to give the Titans. He was actually coming on the Chiefs, making the Chiefs a half-point favorite since they sent that message. So it shows how much I know. But, yeah, I don't think the markets are reacting to Tennessee's win last night with anything other than a little bit more skepticism for them.
Okay. So you like the Chiefs minus the 4.5 next week?
I don't, actually. I mean, I'll tell you the truth. Like, I'm like you, where, like, I don't really bet against the Chiefs, but I'll tell you when I wouldn't bet on them. This is a tough matchup for them, right? Like, I think this is going to be a field goal game, and I think, you know, I think the Chiefs will end up winning it, but to lay a full, I mean, what's going to end up being a full touchdown, I think is a tall order, especially on the road. I think this is a statement game for the Chiefs, but Tennessee's physical, man. I know they have a lot of injuries, but they kind of match up well with the Chiefs.
Okay. All right. We're going to find out. Eric, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. I will speak with you tonight on our Red, White, and True podcast.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on, Sven. You're the best.
You're the man. Eric Eager, the data scientist from Pro Football Focus, with us here in the program. We will take a break. We'll talk some more Chiefs football. Keep the theme rolling. Kind of a Chiefs sandwich here. The Chiefs, the meat. College football, the bread. We did college football in hour one. We're going to do college football with Chip Patterson in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to talk to Tim Grunhard, Hall of Famer, Chiefs Hall of Fame center. Tim Grunhard joins us next. We'll get into those personnel changes on the defensive side of the ball. Find out if Tim thinks that they kind of face their demons by being down at Washington, that was maybe as bad as it could get. And now it's all upside. We'll talk about it next with Tim Grunhard, our football insider and Chiefs Hall of Famer. He joins us next here in the program.
The Burnt End of the Hour Question, brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, Derrick Henry now has 6 touchdown runs of at least 70 yards. How many players in NFL history have more? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.